Thank you, Greg. I'm sure that answered every question here, right? Probably not. But Jason Stevenson is up next, and he'll be able to answer some more detail and anticipate some of your questions, perhaps. He is the Education and Communications Director for the Utah Health Policy Project. And a little bit about Jason. He knows this well from the policy side. He started out as a reporter on Capitol Hill in D.C., so he's been involved for some time. Harvard grad, did some fellowship work at the University of Edinburgh, and is now with the Utah Health Policy Project. Jason Stevenson, your turn. Come on up.
All right. Thank you very much, Larry, and hello to all you guys. What Larry didn't mention is I also worked at Outside and Backpacker magazines, which actually fits pretty well here with this crowd, but actually has very little relevance to healthcare, unless you encounter a grizzly bear, and then there's a bit of overlap there. But I do appreciate Greg's presentation, because we need more presentations that are like that, just the facts, approach to the information that people here in Utah and across the country need. And so I really appreciate what he's been able to deliver tonight, and that's a real treat for you guys to be able to hear that. I work for the Utah Health Policy Project. We're a nonpartisan nonprofit based in Salt Lake City, been around since 2006. We are not affiliated with any health plan or insurance plan. We're a bunch of nerds who think about health policy. That's what we do. And for the past couple of years, we've been trying to figure out how to bring national health reform, or the Affordable Care Act, to a soft landing here in Utah. I do a lot of our presentations. We've done 89 around the state in 2013, from Ogden to Vernal to Moab to Orem and Provo, and we're really glad to be here in Park City tonight. What I'm going to focus on is actually some more specific information about Summit County, and also how people who are looking for this type of insurance can get some assistance. If they've been struggling with the website or want a little bit of help going through it, there are trained people here in Utah that are ready to sit down side by side and walk you through the process. And that's one of the jobs that my organization does as well. Now, in Utah, we have about 96 plans offered by six insurance companies on that healthcare.gov marketplace. Now, here in Summit County, it's a little different. Insurance companies kind of pick and choose where they want to offer plans. And so in Summit County, there's four insurance companies offering 60 plans. And you can see how those are divided up at the bottom, 15 gold, 23 silver, 18 bronze, and four catastrophic plans. So we have a pretty good mixture here. I have some friends who work in some other states like Alabama and Georgia, Vermont. They can count the number of plans in their state on one or two hands, and maybe the number of insurers on just one hand. And what that does is that decreases competition and raises prices. So we have a pretty competitive marketplace in Utah and in Summit County with our four insurers and our 60 plans. This is sort of what it looks like when you go onto the marketplace and you sort of are looking at your insurance plans. As Greg mentioned, there's a medal tier system getting us ready for the Sochi Olympics, except for platinum. I don't think they give those medals out yet. Catastrophic, I guess, is when they run out of bounds. But you've got bronze, silver, gold, and platinum plans. There are no platinum plans currently offered in Summit County, so the majority are that gold through bronze. If you want premium subsidies, those are the plans you need to buy: bronze, silver, gold, or platinum. Premium subsidies aren't allowed or available for folks who buy catastrophic plans, which, as Greg mentioned, are for people under 30, or actually for people who the regular premiums for the other plans are more than 8% of their income. I like to call the catastrophic plans the Utah snowboarder plans, because they're designed for that under 30 guy or girl who really thinks that they're invincible and likes to, you know, shred some pow, but occasionally hits a tree going 30 miles an hour. And if you do that, depending on how many tubes and casts you have, you can rack up a pretty hefty hospital bill. What the catastrophic plan would do if you were a single individual, it would cap your expenses at $6,350. So if you had a $20,000 hospital bill, you would pay your full deductible, which would be $6,350, and then the insurance plan would cover the rest. It also covers three primary care visits a year in case you get the flu, you know, break your arm doing something else. You can go, you know, get a cast on. It doesn't get applied to the deductible. And also preventative care, things like flu shots. So it really is there for those young people who need maybe not health insurance, but financial insurance. And that's a really good plan that they've figured out and put out there for especially the younger under 30 crowd. So unfortunately, the premium subsidies aren't available there, but the cost of those plans are much lower. And as you can see at the bottom of this slide, the way the plans differ are not in the benefits they offer. A gold plan doesn't really offer different benefits than a bronze plan. The way they differ is how you pay for them. So a bronze plan has low monthly premiums, but higher cost sharing. So when you see a specialist or you go pick up a prescription drug, get that fulfilled, you're going to pay a little bit more than with a gold plan where you're going to have high monthly premiums, but you're going to have lower cost sharing. So the bronze plans make more sense for people who don't use a whole lot of health care, and the gold plans make sense for people who use more and see their doctor more often. The way I like to think about it is that these metal tiers help you go and shop because you kind of know before you go into the marketplace, oh, I'm looking for a bronze or a silver. I'm looking for a gold plan. Sort of like when you go to the supermarket and you're shopping for cereal, you know, I'm looking for Cheerios or I'm looking for Wheaties. You know, there's 8 varieties of Cheerios these days. But at least you kind of get narrowed down to focus on at least a couple of the plans or cereal boxes that you're interested in. So this is what it looks like. And again, the numbers at the top of 60% for a catastrophic plan, or I'm sorry, for a bronze plan, 70% are actuarial values of the plans. Whenever I mention the word actuarial value, people tend to run for the door, so I won't talk about it anymore. Greg is probably the best person to ask about that. Now, here's another bit of information. What I've done is I've actually looked at the cheapest plans by age in Summit County. This is information that the Department of Insurance here in Utah put together. So you can see that for a 30-year-old, the cheapest silver plan is about $215, $220 a month. That's the premium for a 30-year-old, single, non-smoker living in Summit County. Because Greg did mention that when you shop for insurance now, your health status, whether or not you have a bad back or diabetes or had, you know, problems with a pregnancy a long time ago, that doesn't matter anymore. There are three things that do matter in terms of how much you can be charged for your insurance. One is where you live. Your geography. Plans in Summit County cost different from plans in Grand County or Weber County. The second is your age. You can see that on this graph. Older people tend to pay more than younger people for insurance. Although, after January 1st, the amount that older people pay, and whenever I say the word older, I always get into trouble, but you can see from the graph, it's about age 40 is where that kicks in. The government said that, not me. Your age, the amount you pay based on age is coming down a little bit. Right now in Utah, it could be up to 6 to 1, 6 times as much for a portion of the premium that an older person would pay than a younger person. Not the full premium, just a portion of the premium. Going forward after January 1st, 2014, that age band drops to 3 to 1. So the maximum that an older person could pay would be 3 times as much for that portion of the premium. And then the third aspect is tobacco use within the last 12 months. So your age, your geography, where you live, and tobacco use are the three things that can adjust how much you pay. But if you're a 30-year-old Summit County resident, non-smoker, and you buy the cheapest silver plan, you pay $220. Someone down the street who's also a 30-year-old Summit County resident, non-smoker, buys that same plan you bought, they're going to pay the exact same price. It's an incredible bit of transparency, which boggles the mind when you think about it. But basically, those three factors, if you match up to the same person and buy the same plan, that's what you're going to pay. And you might pay less, though, with those premium subsidies that Greg had mentioned, which I'll describe in a little bit. But you can really chart this across the way and see a 50-year-old resident of Summit County here buying a silver-level plan would pay about $340 for the cheapest plan out there. And these are actually pretty good prices. My friend in Vermont likes to tell me that the cheapest silver plan for a 30-year-old in Vermont is $600 a month. And the reason that is I think they eat a lot of maple syrup up there. But also, they don't tend to have a lot of younger people. They only have one or two insurers and about a half dozen plans. So the competition isn't in Vermont in the same way that we have it here in Utah. So these are the cheapest plans. These are the most expensive. Very similar bar graph, but this is sort of the other side of the bookend, the most expensive plan. So the cheapest plan for a 30-year-old, a silver plan, was $220, $230. The most expensive plan looks to be about $260, maybe $270, depending on where that falls. For a 50-year-old, the most expensive silver plan in Summit County is a little under $400, probably $390 there. And these are, again, the bookends, the cheapest and the most expensive, based on the data released by the Utah Department of Insurance. And as I described before, you know, there are 23 silver plans, 15 gold plans, 18 bronze plans, and 4 catastrophic plans here in Summit County. So those are just two of those are kind of the bookends, and there's a lot of plans mixed in between those if you were to go on the marketplace and buy them. Now, as Greg mentioned, there's going to be these premium subsidies. Some people call them tax credits, but I think that can be a little bit misleading because a lot of people aren't going to use them as tax credits. They're going to use them as month-to-month premium subsidies. So that's the word I like to use to describe them. There was a study done that showed about 270,000 Utahns, which is a little under 10% of the population, would qualify for premium subsidies. And there was actually a recent study done that said that Utah would have the highest percentage of any state of our population of self-insured, people who buy their own insurance. That population would be the highest percentage of any state qualifying for premium subsidies, 84% in our state. And I think that's probably due to a lot of reasons, but we do have a lot of self-employed and sort of franchise owners and sort of kind of work-at-home type people in Utah, which means that their income is variable and they probably would qualify for these subsidies more than other states which maybe have a little bit more regular employment. Now, in Summit County, the data I have has a group with a bunch of other counties, but about 16,250 residents of Carbon, Daggett, Duchesne, Emory, Grand, Morgan, San Juan, Summit, Uinta, and Wasatch counties would qualify for these subsidies. And actually, it tends to be the younger people who qualify, but it really stretches across all age ranges as well. And this is the table. This is another version of a table that shows who's qualified for the subsidies. And as Greg mentioned, if you earn between 100 and 400% of the federal poverty level, you will get a subsidy if you're looking for insurance on the private market, buying it through the marketplace, which for a single person goes from $11,490 all the way up to $45,000, almost $46,000. A family of four, 100% of poverty is $23,000, up to $94,000 is 400% of the federal poverty limit. The median family income in Utah is $57,000, which actually is kind of right in the middle of this chart. So that's why when you think about that, median family income, $57,000, that's why there's so many Utahns who are going to be qualifying for these subsidies. Now, as Greg mentioned, if you work for a big company that provides you with insurance, you can't go and get these subsidies. You can't buy this insurance on the marketplace. However, if you lose your job and you lose your insurance, then all of a sudden this becomes the option that you can pursue. So it is available for people who are looking for insurance and don't have it through their employer. So as I like to say when I do these presentations, if you can find yourself on this chart, you qualify for a premium subsidy. And they are a sliding scale, so the people lower on the income scale tend to get more. The challenge in Utah is because of Medicaid expansion, which we definitely, I think, will get into, if you earn less than 100% of the federal poverty level, you don't qualify for a premium subsidy. So if you earn 101% of the federal poverty level, $12,000 as a single person, you get a very generous subsidy to purchase private insurance on the Utah marketplace. If you earn 95% of the federal poverty level, maybe $11,200, $11,000 a year, you get nothing. Because Utah would not usually provide Medicaid for you unless you were over 65, disabled, or pregnant. Or had children, but then you have to be under 50% or 44% of the federal poverty level, which creates what we call the Medicaid expansion gap population, which is one of the issues driving Medicaid expansion decisions in Utah and in the other states that are still figuring this out. Let's look at a couple families. This is the Reyes family. They don't actually exist. I just sort of created them. They make $53,000, a family of four that lives here in Park City. Dad's 45, mom's 42. One child's 10, the other's 13. They make $53,000, about 225% of the federal poverty level. There's a new chart that says if you're a family of four and you make $53,000, you're expected to pay 7.18% of your income towards your insurance, sort of like a tax table, but in reverse a little bit. So if they were to buy the benchmark silver level plan offered here in Park City in Summit County, which kind of is the bullseye, the benchmark silver level plan is kind of the one right in the middle, maybe a little bit on the lower end of all the plans, all the silver plans offered here in Utah. And again, I think there's 20-some silver plans, so it's somewhere in there. So they would, their plan would cost $9,000. They would be expected to pay $3,800, which means they would get a subsidy of conveniently $5,280. That, I didn't put that in there. That's number of feet in a mile, right? But they would be expected to pay $5,280, which means their monthly premium normally would have been $757, but actually they would end up paying $317 a month, and they would get a subsidy of $440. And the way it works is every month they would write a check for $317 and send it to the insurance company that they bought their insurance from. And every month the Treasury Department is going to write a check for $440. It doesn't go to the family. It goes directly again to that private insurance company to make up the rest of their premium. And let's say all of a sudden their job, they get go from $53,000 to $60,000, they get a promotion. What they would need to do is call up the marketplace and say, hey, we're earning more money. Can you adjust our premium? So maybe that next month they would pay $340 a month, you know, 20 or so dollars more, and the subsidy would come down correspondingly. So there'd be some adjustments. Or they have another child. They become a family of five, and therefore their subsidy would also adjust based on that. It sort of happens already in private insurance. If you get married, there's a death, there's a birth, there's an adoption, you change your insurance, you change how much you would pay in some regards. In this case, it's that way, but also based on how your income changes. And your income needs to be reconciled at the end of the year when you file your taxes, because if you end up making more money than you thought you were, then you're going to need to pay back some of those subsidies that you received. And likewise, if you make less than you thought you were going to make, you're going to get a little bit more of a refund, or in that case, a tax credit coming to you at the end of the year. So everything would be reconciled on the 1040 form when you file it the next year. A little bit complicated, which is why next year I'm going to be traveling around with a pack of CPAs when I do these presentations, because there's going to be a lot of tax questions, and we're going to all go from being health policy wonks to tax policy wonks. Let's take a look at another family, the Shumways. They live in Provo, Utah, family of two, but with a baby on the way, so they're buying insurance for three. They make $44,000. If you look at the numbers again, their premium for a silver level plan would be about $538 if they didn't get a subsidy. But they do get a subsidy, and they would pay $263 a month for their insurance, and their subsidy would be about $274. So basically their premium gets cut in half. They get that help to make those insurance premium payments. So maybe they wouldn't be on insurance. Maybe they couldn't afford that $538 a month, which would have been, you know, a substantial part of their income. And so maybe, you know, that baby wouldn't have gotten the prenatal care that it needed, or they would have gone on Medicaid for that baby's prenatal care and for the delivery, but then the mom would have lost her insurance. The baby would have been covered, well, maybe not on Medicaid or CHIP because they're over 200%. So this could have been an uninsured family that now is going to get insurance for $263 a month with the help of the subsidy. And finally, Mr. and Mrs. Smith from Roy, Utah, that would be, I think, Davis County. They make $42,000 a year. They're kind of in that age frame where they're waiting for Medicare, 60 and 62 years old. Their income puts them pretty high up there. 8.75% is how much they're going to pay a percentage of their income for their insurance, which means their $10,000 premium, again, that premium's higher because they're older. They're in their 60s, so they're paying more for their insurance. But they're only going to pay $3,600 a year for their insurance, which translates to $300 a month. And they're going to get a subsidy of $589 a month. So insurance that would have cost them almost $900 a month, it's going to cost them $300 a month, and the subsidy is going to make up the difference. My babysitter, the woman who watches my two-year-old son, is right in this category, waiting for Medicare, has a pre-existing condition that really prices her out of insurance right now. She pays almost $1,000 a month just for insurance for herself, somehow makes those payments. Under the Affordable Care Act, her insurance would drop down to $200 or $300 a month, with the subsidy and the pre-existing condition going away and her age not counting as much. So these folks like Mr. and Mrs. Smith and like my babysitter are going to be healthier and insured going into Medicare, which means they're going to be less of a cost on the system when they're finally on government insurance like Medicare, because they'll be looked after for the years up to that. If you wanted to run these calculations for yourself, this is the easy way to do it. It's the website kff.org. Kaiser Family Foundation. Henry Kaiser built the Liberty ships during World War II. He earned a lot of money, so he set up a bunch of hospitals and this foundation to look at healthcare policy. And there's a calculator that goes right down to your zip code. You put in your zip code, your age, number of people in your family, tobacco use, how much you make, and it'll tell you what you would pay for the middle level or bullseye level silver plan in your area. That's where I did these calculations. It's very accurate for predicting what you might get there. Now, a lot of people ask, when I start showing those numbers of the subsidies, where does that money come from? And my answer is, we're growing it in the western deserts of Utah using unicorns and rainbows. But no one believes me, even though I show a picture of it, which I didn't put in this slide. So where does that money come from? Where do those subsidies come from? Because some of them are quite substantial. For families that would normally pay $900 a month for insurance, they're going to get a $600 a month subsidy. Well, it comes from cuts and it comes from taxes. The cuts are pretty well explained. Most of them are for prearranged payment cuts to Medicare and Medicaid payment rates to hospitals and to doctors. A lot of these have actually been sort of already in the works, and the savings from those are going to go be plowed back into the healthcare system. The reason a lot of, almost $415 billion worth of cuts over 10 years comes from those is because Medicare and Medicaid are such big programs, you tweak it just a little bit, you change $1 here or $5 there, you're quickly talking billions of dollars because of the volume that the government pays out for those services. So almost half of the cuts, over half of the cuts come from reimbursement rates to doctors and hospitals. Another $156 billion come from changes to Medicare Advantage reimbursement rates. Medicare Advantage is also, again, for people over 65. It's private Medicare insurance that has been paying a little bit more than traditional Medicare, or being doctors and hospitals get reimbursed a little bit more. And so the government's going to start paring that back to bring it back down on par with what traditional Medicare pays. There's also going to be cuts for hospitals. It's called uncompensated care. Or DSH payments, DSH payments. What that means is hospitals have always kind of carried the burden of the uninsured, because that's where people can go to get help when they run into a healthcare problem if they don't have insurance or they don't have a doctor. As more people get insurance, as more people have PCPs and have doctors, they're not going to be using these emergency rooms for that sort of emergency care or maybe non-emergency care to just kind of get them back together. And so the federal government has always paid hospitals to compensate them for this kind of extra care. So they're going to be dialing that back as more people get insurance, up to $56 billion over the next 10 years. There's another $114 billion of other, which I've tried to figure out. I think it's a lot of paper clips or something that they're saving. But this these numbers come from the Congressional Budget Office via the Washington Post, and I haven't been able to drill down any further into that. But the total cuts are almost $800 billion or $750 billion over 10 years, and primarily focused on reimbursements that the government is paying for Medicare and Medicaid. Now, the taxes, of course, another big issue that people are concerned about. There is a tax on individuals, and it's called the high earners capital gains taxes. It's generally for single people who earn more than $200,000 a year and couples who file jointly who earn more than $250,000 a year. So that's generally, I guess, why it's called high earners. And it's an extra 3.8% tax on any capital gains that you make when you sell a stock or a bond, in addition to the whatever tax you have on top of that from normal capital gains. There's also a tax on any home sale where you net more than $500,000 profit. Not that this home is sold for $500,000, but there's a profit of at least $500,001. You would pay that tax on any dollar amount over $500,000 profit. There's a medical devices tax, which definitely hits a lot of Utah companies. We have quite a few of them here in Utah. It is a pretty substantial tax, and they're plenty upset about it, and obviously you can understand why. They're being kind of singled out for this, along with tanning salons as well. There's a 10% tax on tanning salons, which is designed to plow money back into the Affordable Care Act. There was a really good article in the New York Times this summer about sort of medical devices and about a gentleman from Colorado who went to Belgium to get a knee replacement that ended up costing quite a bit less than the knee replacement that he would have paid for in Colorado. Turns out the knee that went into his, or the titanium knee that went into his leg, came off the same loading dock from Warsaw, Indiana. But in Belgium, it cost a couple $1,000s, and in Colorado, it cost over $20,000. People ask, well, why are medical device makers being singled out? Well, there is definitely some profits in that industry, and when they wrote the law, they decided that this was one industry that was going to be, have a tax on it where it didn't have one before. The penalties, or the taxes for individuals, employers, also are part of the tax structure, as well as a tax on Cadillac health plans, which, if you have a Cadillac, don't worry, it's not a tax on your car. These are extra generous health plans, primarily used by unions and other sort of people who get very generous health plans that don't have copays or deductibles and really cause people to use a lot more health care than maybe they would. So those plans are going to get a pretty serious tax to try to bring them back into line. It's all about incentives and disincentives, I guess, here. And then also $216 billion worth of cost savings, which I think comes from, you catch a cold before it comes pneumonia. You catch someone who goes into diabetic shock before it becomes an amputation, you end up saving money. So the more people who are having insurance and receiving care, the more you're going to catch things and the more savings you're going to get within our entire healthcare system. Greg has actually covered the penalties, so I'll skip those. I just wanted to say, if you're interested in more of these issues, we are having a conference on December 5th, this Thursday, at the Red Lion Hotel, where we're going to be talking about all these issues again. Former Lieutenant Governor Greg Bell is going to be our keynote speaker, and we're going to talk about these issues from Medicaid expansion to how the Affordable Care Act is going in much greater depth, and that'll be December 5th at the Red Lion Hotel in Salt Lake City this Thursday. but now about how people are going to get help. Because it just wouldn't be fair if the Obama administration said, hey, here's insurance, go get it, there's a penalty if you don't get it, and by the way, the website doesn't work. You know, that wouldn't be fair if they did that, which is kind of exactly what they did. But at least they did something right, which is they said, we're going to create a new group of folks out there to help folks sign up for insurance. And they're called navigators or certified application counselors. And here in Utah, we have quite a few of them based in hospitals, community organizations, clinics. And the group I work for, the Utah Health Policy Project, received a federal grant, a competitive federal grant, to actually fund many of these navigators throughout the state. Our partners are the United Way 211 system and also the Association of Utah Community Health, which runs the sort of federally qualified health clinics that work on a sliding scale here, both usually all around Utah. So we received a grant, we took that money, and then we immediately sent it out to 12 other organizations so that they could hire navigators and certified application counselors. So how are they different? It's my favorite slide. In Radioland, you can't see this great image of Top Gun with Tom Cruise and Goose there, but navigators are like the pilots. They're the ones who pilot the plane. They do a lot of the work, not only of signing people up for insurance, but they actually do presentations like the one we're doing tonight. But they don't do them just in English. They do them in Nepalese. They do them in Arabic. They do them in Spanish. They do them in whatever language is in the community that they're working. And so they're very culturally attuned to go out and make sure that they're working with those underserved, those people who need insurance and need that extra help signing up for it. Certified application counselors do that same kind of enrollment. They have a little bit less requirements, and they can help people sign up. And a lot of them are actually based in organizations that are already active in communities, groups like libraries and health clinics or community organizations, nonprofits. So these certified application counselors are just usually adding this enrollment aspect to the job that they already do. Now, where can people get help? Well, here's four or five ways that people can get help. First is healthcare.gov. Not only is it the website where you go and actually sign up for insurance, but it actually is a really good resource for questions. If you want to know, do I qualify for this, or if my husband has insurance, do I get any kind of premium subsidy? There's a great FAQ section, frequently asked questions section, on healthcare.gov. I used to work for magazines, as I mentioned, and writing things in a simple to understand way is really challenging. But healthcare.gov does a good job at it. I'm pretty impressed. It's not irs.gov. It's a lot better. The answers are simple. They're easy to understand and easy to navigate. So healthcare.gov is a good place to go to get questions answered as well as to sign up for insurance. There's also takecareutah.org. And as we like to say, this is the website that works. It's the website that my organization and other organizations set up specifically for Utah. So you go there, you actually type in your zip code, and we'll tell you where the nearest navigators and certified application counselors are in your community. Sort of like you're looking for your nearest Home Depot, type in the zip code on the Home Depot website, you get to find out where the nearest people who are there to help you. And actually, right outside this event, we have some nice new bookmarks, which have the Take Care Utah website, as well as the United Way 211 number on them. Feel free to pick them up and share them with folks who you think might need them. We just printed them today, so you're the first audience to get them. So Take Care Utah is a great resource specifically designed here for Utah. We're going to be adding new navigators and certified application counselors and brokers to it every week to really spread out to all four corners of the state. And these are those bookmarks that you can get to pass along as resources. There's also United Way 211. For those who don't have internet access, hopefully they would have access to a phone. And so if you dial 211, you get connected to not only navigators, but people there who can direct you and work with you on the Take Care Utah website, answer your questions about health insurance, find someone who can help you in your neighborhood, in your community. So it's a great and anonymous way for people to get help over the phone. You just dial 211. It's a statewide free information line. And as I should also mention, the navigators and certified application counselors also provide their services free of charge. There's also the community health clinics. You can find out where they are in your neighborhood by going to ouch.org, A-U-C-H. I still think they have the best acronym in the healthcare world. So they are, again, the federally qualified health clinics, which serve a variety of folks on a sliding scale, people who are insured, uninsured, on Medicaid or Medicare. And they have a lot of certified application counselors based right there on site. So people come in for a prenatal visit. They don't have insurance. They can get signed up right after they, you know, listen to the fetal heart tone. So they kind of have a one-stop shop for healthcare and enrollment at these community health clinics. And lastly, also insurance brokers. Insurance brokers are trained and educated to sign people up for the marketplace insurance on healthcare.gov. It's no cost to the consumer to take advantage of them. So if you have a trusted relationship,
with an insurance broker. It's a good place to go. And they are really the only people who can work on Avenue H, Utah's small business marketplace, as Greg had mentioned. So insurance brokers are another vital part of the puzzle of getting people signed up for coverage. And in summary, I just want to close out with sort of the five things to mention about the Affordable Care Act, the takeaways that hopefully you would be able to bring to any conversations you have about it. I did this before Thanksgiving. I called it a Thanksgiving dinner survival guide for those, you know, questions you get from your crazy Uncle Leo about what's going on in the world. So first of all, healthcare.gov is the place to go and get healthcare, although you can also sign up on individual insurance websites as well, especially if you don't qualify for premium subsidies. But if you really want premium subsidies, healthcare.gov is the place to go for those. Second of all, no one can be denied or priced out of coverage based on a pre-existing condition or their health status. Someone like my nanny, my babysitter, who had a health condition that really jacked up her insurance costs, well, that's going to go away for her after January 1st. It's going to become a lot more affordable for her to stay insured. So being sick doesn't matter anymore. So people who've had bad experiences with shopping for insurance, there's a new ball game that's going on now. Third, Obamacare insurance is private insurance. It's insurance from the companies that you know in your community that have the billboards up and down I-15 and that are operating here in Summit County as well. So a lot of people equate private insurance with good insurance, and so that is what is for sale on healthcare.gov. Fourth, subsidies will make these premiums more affordable for a lot of Utahns. As I mentioned, 84% of the folks in Utah who qualify for this marketplace insurance are going to get subsidies, according to a recent study. And those subsidies are on a sliding scale based on your income. Fifth, there are navigators and certified application counselors available to help you sign up. You can find them at takecareutah.org, or at your community health clinic or your local library. They're going to have the resources to direct you to this help. If you need that one-on-one, someone to sit down and walk you through the process, no matter what language you speak, no matter what your health status is, that's what they're trained to do, and they do it for free. That's the end of my presentation. I thank you very much, and I think we now are going to the panel discussion.
Yeah, thank you, Jason. You've now had two experts give you a summary, so it'll be time for your questions.